Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, this is Money Talking. I'm Charlie Herman. Before the opening bell even rang on Wall Street Monday morning, we knew it was coming.
It is looking like a very ugly day for investors and for your 401k. The opening bell just moments away.
And we knew where it was coming from, China. When the Dow Jones plunged 1,000 points right at the start of trading, everyone pointed their fingers to that country. So let's put aside our worries about our 401ks and our mutual funds and look more closely at the source of the turmoil. Why is this communist nation that has been a leader in the global economy for years suddenly one of its biggest risks? To help sort it out, with me are Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Jordan Weissman from Slate. And to both of you, it seemed for so long that we thought China was doing a really great job of running their economy, of directing it, and now it seems to be floundering. Are they up to the task for handling what's happening right now?
You know, I think the jury is very much out. I think it's sort of fascinating that the Chinese technocrats kind of convinced everybody that they were these sort of really amazing economic handlers. But I actually think that barring the quick stimulus that they did after the 2008 market crash, that there's been a lot of sort of back and forth jittery reactions to how they're managing this major transition that they have to do in their economy from basically being a place where you manufacture cheap shoes to being a more sophisticated service economy where consumers are driving things. And I think that the policy ups and downs of the last few weeks really reflect that.
Yeah. In some ways, I think what we're seeing right now is the sophomore slump, right? You can think you can think of like the years 1998 to maybe 2008 as like China's debut album. It's like their Appetite for Destruction or something along those lines. I mean, and,
oh my God, I love that. Yeah. What is this?
Like, well, it might be their Chinese democracy. Like, but so what, you know, when you talk about development, economists are pretty much in agreement that the easy part is putting some policies in place so that you can start building your manufacturing base and using all this excess labor you have to start selling things around the world. Now, when you have to start a consumer economy, that's the really tough part. That's where you make the turn, and they have to figure out how to navigate that.
But if people knew that, if this is something that's coming that's going to be difficult, why are we surprised? Why are people saying, oh my gosh, who imagined this could happen out of China?
I mean, I think most sophisticated investors aren't actually surprised. And I think that what's happened that's fascinating is that you had this unsophisticated base in China of investors. I mean, 60-70% of Chinese retail investors don't have a high school degree. And yet the government was pushing them into the stock market and then spending $400 billion to buoy that market and then suddenly saying, oh, you know what? We're going to let it fall. That's what was strange and surprising.
But I want to ask you, Jordan, this question about debt, because China had this huge level of debt. There was a study from McKinsey that was finding debt to GDP was approaching 300%. So considering the debt crisis that we just went through a couple of years ago and look how bad that was, again, why weren't people trying to figure out a way to deal with this or understanding that this was coming and coming soon?
Well, I think people, again, there have been warnings. So it wasn't like everyone was unaware. But what you have to remember is, again, even though they've promoted themselves as this unified band of ingenious technocrats, the Chinese government's really fractious. And there are different competing interests, right? You have a central bank that is trying to kind of accomplish one set of goals. You know, they kind of want to make all sorts of reforms so that eventually the yuan will be used as a global reserve currency. Meanwhile, you have a government that is a little wary about those reforms because they have all sorts of businesses and stakeholders and influential Chinese billionaires who are worried that the economy that has allowed them to rise is suddenly going to disappear and change.
You know, this is actually a great point, and this is, I think, the biggest impediment to China changing its model. There was another study done a few years back showing that the top 1,000 wealthiest people in China are either tight with the party themselves or have family members that are tight with the party. You've basically got a system of vested interests that have gotten incredibly wealthy from the status quo, and the change that the government is looking to make would rock that boat. That's a very difficult thing to do. And by the way, forgetting just the fact that you're dealing with autocracy in this incredibly diverse, huge country, only three countries in Asia have ever made the shift that China is trying to make from basically being manufacturing nations to more sophisticated economies, and that's Japan, South Korea, and Singapore. And all of them had, I think, much less difficult political situations to work with.
Does capitalism work in a communist autocratic country?
I think the jury is still out on that. And I mean, you know, it's fascinating, too, because the other thing that we need to talk about is the U.S. isn't really helping this situation either. I mean, the U.S. and China, I always like to think of us as being in this kind of really dysfunctional marriage, you know, where, okay. You know, both sides have this enormous dysfunction. I mean, we need to sit down and have therapy together somewhere, you know, and resolve these issues, because basically both countries have to change their model in order for the whole thing to work. And nobody's changed. The U.S. threw a wet blanket on things with the Fed. $4 trillion money dump after the crisis. China took on a lot of debt. It's business as usual.
So, Jordan, how exposed is the U.S. to what's happening in China?
I think that, again, this is an area where there's a lot of disagreement. There's a lot of ambiguity. I'd say the common answer is not that exposed. Yes, I think they're our third biggest export partner, but our economy in general isn't that export-driven. We have a consumer economy.
So then why are we so worried if we're not that exposed?
But there are big American companies that rely a lot on their business in China. Apple sells a lot of iPhones in China. GM sells a lot of cars in China. There are natural resource companies that sell a lot of agricultural commodities to China.
Yeah, big companies, big international companies get about a third of their profits now in the overseas markets, and China is the biggest of those markets. But it also has another sort of side effect, which is that China affects the emerging markets in a big, big way.
Those so when being China, like Brazil and
the commodities-rich nations, Russia, Brazil, West Africa, parts of Latin America, when China slows down and doesn't need as much raw materials and energy, those countries slow down, and then you've got a real snowball cycle.
A snowball because it's a global slowdown.
That's right. And also, by the way, China now makes up the biggest percentage of global growth in the last few years. That's a role that used to be played by the U.S. Now it's played by China, which is a big shift.
Okay, so you said that there needs to be some marriage counseling between the U.S. and China. We're going to get that in September when President Obama and President Xi Jinping of China are meeting at a summit in Washington. So with everything that's going on right now, how's that going to go?
Yeah, I think if I were Barack Obama, I would just want to ask, like, what's the deal? Like, you know, sort of like, okay, you've been making all these currency moves. You've been letting it devalue. You've kind of been letting it move with the market. Just what are you doing? Like that, I feel like there might be an opportunity for just people to kind of talk in private and get a little bit of a better sense of if either side has any strategy with what's going on, which might be. And there might not be that. That's maybe the scariest possibility here, that there just is no strategy in China
right now. And
they're
just winging it.
Yeah, that they're just kind of listless and confused.
Well, Jordan Weissman with Slate and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And for WNYC, I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking.